can hear me, make sure you post in the questions box so I know you can see the screen and you can hear me and I'm not talking to myself. I'm always afraid of that, apparently. I think I do that quite often. Thanks, Linda. Thanks, Rich. Awesome. So we're going to be bringing up the guys in just a second. I know they just hopped on. We had some technical difficulties a second ago. So what we're going to do, though, and I didn't have a chance to let them know this, but we always do the same thing every week. You guys better know the drill by now. So for the quick check-in, what is your number one goal in your business and the number of active actions that you actually completed this week? So go ahead and post that right now. And yes, thank you, Jason. I am feeling way better 2 weeks later. Finally, the drugs that they gave me, crazy amounts of antibiotics and a whole bunch of other things, are finally working. Thank you for caring. I appreciate it. All right, so go ahead and post the number one goal in your business. So Nicole, 25 grand per month in one-on-one services, and you got 5 out of 5. Congratulations, although you need to reach out for even more new testimonials. I love hearing that. And like I said, I'll record a video for you tomorrow about that coaching page so I can tell you a little bit more on that side. Jason's goal is 21 grand per month, and you got 2.75 out of 3. Thank you for doing 3 instead of 5 again, Jason, and I love that you got 2.75, almost all of them this time. Congratulations. Linda's goal is 10 grand a month, and you got 3 out of 5. Janelle's goal is 15 grand per month, and got 3.5 out of 5. Rich said his 90-day goal is to have his book published on Amazon and 1,000 people on my email list. I love it. Carl's goal is 20 grand per month. Oh, and Rich got all 5. Congratulations. And Carl got 4 out of 5 done. Congratulations on that, too. David's goal, 20 grand per month, which is 4 to 6 clients and 20 grand in the bank. Got 3 out of 5. But exactly what I needed to get done. Oh, yeah. I love hearing that, guys. That's the whole point. So even if you can't have all the time in the world to get absolutely everything done, at least do the most important things, which is what we care about most. Awesome. So you know the next drill. Did you do your productivity and visioning? So if you feel like you were productive this week, say yes. And please be honest if you didn't. And, of course, if you did your visioning or actually looked at it or did meditation or some sort of looking towards the future, I did a really long meditation today. It was amazing. Make sure you say yes and yes. All right. Carl, yes and yes. Rich, yes, yes. Minot, yes, yes. Janelle, yes and yes. I love all the exclamation points. You guys are excited tonight. I hope you're excited for Ace and Noah, who are going to come on in just a second. Yeah, yes and yes. There's no no's in the house this time? Gosh, you guys are catching on. I love it. Or you just don't want to get called out while Noah and Ace are waiting. Awesome. All right. So tonight, and make sure you keep posting. Oh, for some reason, GoToWebinar is being a little bit slow. Yes to productivity. Just listen to the visioning, adding that in. Yes, productive vision every morning. Yes and yes, yes and yes. Good. We've got everybody else answering too, which I so appreciate. All right. So let me go over the amazing men that we have on the line today. The funny thing is that we've never had two millionaires on at the same time. So I am so excited. You have no idea. And I didn't even know Noah and Ace, A, knew each other, B, were working together. So when AJ asked if they could come on together, I was like, of course, in a second. So I'm super excited. We have a couple quotes here from them, but let me go through and start explaining what each of them do before I bring them up on the line. Because what I want you to do is be able to ask exactly what you need to get the most out of having them on the line today. Okay? So Noah's saying, there's nothing I enjoy more than talking with entrepreneurs about the future they're creating. And Ace, the rebel entrepreneur. I think we're going to have fun tonight. So Ace is a successful investor, business strategist, and Noah is a successful businessman who has 3 books, sold 6 companies, huge background in business, tax, the companies that they do. And Ace was actually business partners or had a thing with one of my other friends. So Ace, you do apparently a lot of partnerships also, so maybe we can talk about that. if anyone has questions on that, along with investing. Ace buys and sells businesses. It's kind of amazing. Franchising, I loved our interview. We had everybody pop in and hopefully listen to the interview if they had a chance to this week already. And then, of course, Noah deals with future planning and wealth. He has a whole company about wealth, being wealth advisors, investing, CPA, taxes, etc. Perfect. So all that in a nutshell. So what I want to do is welcome the guys. Make sure you guys say hi and welcome. And Joel, can we unmute them so I can stop talking about them behind their backs? Let's hope we can bring them both up too, because I know we didn't have a chance to do a mic check before. All right, can you guys hear me? All right, so I know you guys can hear me, but I'm wondering if Ace and Noah, let's see. No, there looks like Noah's having some issues. Then I don't know where Ace went. Uh-oh, tech problems. Hey, Joel, can you hop on? Can you hop up so you can let me know what's going on? Or text me.
Hey, Jeremy, can you hear me?
Yeah, it looks like Noah's here, but we can't get him unmuted.
Yeah, for some reason it's not unmuting, and Ace was on for a second, and then it looked like he had to potentially reboot.
See, this is why we test beforehand, right? Good to know. All right, so what I want you guys to do is let me know if you have any.
Oh wait, let me see. Am I there, Jamie? Did that
yes.
work for me? All right, good. It was on my phone. It wanted me to unmute myself. Sorry about that.
You guys are together in person.
We're together. Yeah, we're together in person. We're like, we just finished dinner. We finished a whole day of planning for a business that we're working on.
That's amazing.
But Ace is
not a. You guys knew each other.
Yeah. So I'll get into it, but hopefully I want to get Ace's audio working. He's on a telephone. I'm in through the webinar on my cell phone. So his code, he didn't enter a PIN, an audio PIN.
Okay, so
maybe,
Joel.
Maybe that's what we need.
Joel, I already sent you Ace's cell phone number. Can you just contact him and me and Noah will chat until we can get Ace up and running? Does that make sense?
We'll start.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah, Ace is here. He said that's all right. We're allowed. We have permission. Permission to begin.
Permission from the man.
Yeah.
I love that. That's awesome. At least we have two. Sweet. One doesn't work. I at least have one.
One yeah, right. You got a little backup.
Yeah, so Noah, why don't we go into it really quick? Because, like I said, I haven't actually had two on, and I want to make sure that everybody gets to ask everything that they want that would really, really be as potent as humanly possible in the next month or two for them. So can you go into a little bit more detail than what I did in my listing of what you're amazing at? Can you go into what you help businesses with?
Sure. So as an investor in companies, I provide debt and equity solutions to people that have profitable, growing businesses, but they don't have cash. And, you know, it's unfortunately a problem a lot of people face is they try and scale their business. They end up with accounts receivable, but they don't have the money. Or they need to purchase more products so they could sell more product online. But, you know, what's going to come first, the chicken or the egg? So those are the businesses I really enjoy financing, either, like I said, through debt or through equity. And then my expertise, aside from just helping them by providing capital, is also in the strategy, culture, and finances. So oftentimes I'll take an equity position in a company in lieu of or in addition to the debt. And I'll help them with strategic planning. I'll help them with their marketing plan. I'll help them figure out how to scale the business even faster.
I love this. Okay, so it's. I really appreciate that you brought up that, yeah, there's cash flow issues even when you're profitable, people, just so we know, and that's why we talk to people like Noah. And you guys can even ask questions, and I want you to start asking questions now even though we don't have Ace up yet. Don't worry, I will run it all so we can ask Noah questions up front.
And Ace is here listening, so he can hear
yes.
all the audio.
Oh, good.
So we'll make sure to take notes and he can chime in once his audio is up and running.
Awesome. So one of the things that I think is really important, a lot of the hustlers on the call right now are getting into it. Most of their goals, as you heard them at the beginning, hopefully, were like 15, 10, 10,000 a month, 20,000 a month, 30,000 a month, something like that. So what I want you guys to think about that are on right now and asking questions is Noah can help you so much on this. Not that Ace can't either. I know Ace can also, but geez, it's the, we sort of avoid looking at the money side, right? We're like, oh, it looks like we're making money. Yay. And then we get stuck. So what do you do to help? Let's say you go into one of these businesses, you can help them with a quick influx of cash, very similar to Shark Tank people, right? What do you help them on the strategy side to really help them grow bigger faster?
So kind of the number one go-to thing that I do is I implement what's called the Entrepreneurial Operating System, EOS, which was invented by a guy named Gino Wick, wrote a book called Traction, and also a parable called Get a Grip. And I'm getting an echo now because I think you're in here, Ace. There we go. Check them out. The EOS system is something that entrepreneurs can implement on their own, or they can hire a professional implementer. So most of the companies that I deal with don't have the cash flow to hire a professional implementer. And so when I'm an equity investor, I'll actually do the implementation in exchange for additional equity and help them create their vision traction organizer, which is a term of art that is part of the entrepreneurial operating system, and plan out their business in the six main areas and just help them figure out, so here's where we're headed, here's our path, here's how we're going to do it, and everybody's on the same page, pulling in the same direction.
Ooh, okay. Tell me more about this entrepreneurial operating system, because I haven't heard of this before. I thought it was your branding. I was like, that branding's great. This is something that you learned about, and now you work with companies. So tell us more about what it is so we can implement.
Yeah, the interesting thing, I guess, is this goes back 20 years for me, maybe even a little bit farther. I guess it's 22 years, maybe even longer. My college fraternity had gotten kicked off campus, and we were back on, and one of the alumni came and said, look, we need a strategic plan for the fraternity. And they led us through a strategic planning day where we came up with what the strengths of our fraternity were and what the weaknesses were and what the opportunities and the threats were. And then we created a plan based on that for how we were going to grow the fraternity. And it was like a really interesting experience for me because you've got a bunch of, college kids who really just want to drink and party, and yet, even in spite of that, we really came up with a good plan, and we grew our little organization from 18 members to 100 members, from renting a small house to owning the largest house. And I could really attribute it all to the seeds of getting us all on the same page and having a plan. So when I graduated from college and took a job in accounting, I didn't really want to be a regular accountant. That didn't seem like that much fun, but I liked the idea of becoming a CPA. So what I did is I took our clients that had 10, 20, 50, $70 million businesses, and I started doing strategic planning for them when I was in my early 20s. I would take them away for 2 days. We'd go to either an exotic location or just, get them all out of the office. And I'd run a 2-day, 16-hour long retreat process. And then every 6 weeks, I'd go back to their company and make sure they were doing what they said they were going to do. And I really loved it. It was a lot of fun for me, but I was in a CPA firm, and when you're in a CPA environment, the way you kind of go up the ranks is by managing people who are billing time to clients. And I was the only one in our company that was doing this. So it wasn't scalable, and I ended up abandoning it after about 3 years. So it wasn't until probably, I would say, another 3 years ago, I decided to pick it back up and decided, I'm going to go out and buy a bunch of companies, equity positions in a bunch of companies, and I'll do this planning because I know it works really well, and it's been great.
Awesome. So I want to ask one other question about that before we sort of go what Ace really does. But what are the key things within it that make a big difference? If you started implementing it in your fraternity, and now it's like, oh, yeah, it was amazing. And then you implement it in these businesses. Oh, yeah, amazing. Tell us the secret sauce so that way we know.
Yeah, it's no secret. It's what everybody would think, right? It's getting the right people in the right seats, and that it's all the stuff that we all know. But the most important part that I've seen is making sure that everyone is headed in the same direction. Because when we manage organizations, the only difference between one company and another are the people that are in it. So we're really just talking about how do we manage our people. And people left to their own devices are going to act in their own way. And, you know, even the people change. You know, the people that work at Google go over and work at Apple, and then the people that are working at Apple go over and work at Amazon. You know, the talent moves. So the only way that the company can, you know, exceed average of the people that it has in its, on its team is by having a really clear vision and a really clear path to what you're trying to accomplish. And as entrepreneurs, we have clear vision sometimes. We have a path that we're on sometimes. You know, sometimes we get distracted, sometimes we change our mind. But it's all the other people in the organization, especially when you're going from that 10,000 a month, 20,000 a month, 30,000 a month, where you're really driving all those decisions, to 50,000 a month, 80,000 a month, 100,000 a month, where you have to start adding people. At some point, those people have to make a decision without you. And not all the decisions are, you know, should the paper be folded, you know, the bottom up and then the top down when it goes in the envelope. You know, not all of them are simple, unimportant decisions. Some of them are going to be decisions that have an impact. You know, a customer calls and they're complaining about something. How are you going to treat them? It might be, you know, a new business opportunity that you can make a lot of money on, but it's really outside of your strike zone. Are you going to pursue it and try and, you know, make it fit into the box, or are you going to pass on it even though it's a good opportunity? So when you're dealing with humans and their decision making, getting them back to a framework that says, look, here's where we're going, here's what we want to do, here's what we don't want to do, here's what we stand for, here's what we don't accept. It, when you put all that down on paper and you cover it every quarter and you cover it every week and you are talking about it consistently, it really, really impacts everyone's decision making, which is what leads to performance.
It's so funny because it really does sound a lot of the principles in Hustlers. So we make them choose one goal. We, if you heard at the beginning, we check out it to make sure that they review their vision every single week. Like simple, super simple stuff, but it's amazing how it really adds up over time. Yeah. We have a couple questions coming in, but I want to make sure we go through and chat with Ace too. Are we working, Ace? Can you hear us? Can we hear you?
Let's see. Can you hear me?
Yay! All right. So kind of like what we did with Noah, I want you to go through and sort of give us sort of a better synopsis than I did of the list of the stuff that you really help with entrepreneurs, because your background is fantastic also.
So yeah, I used to be this deal maker, and then I got interviewed by Jamie from Eventual Millionaire, and then everywhere I went, I would speak, they'd be like, so you're the guy that was interviewed by Jamie. Isn't she awesome?
She's only one person famous. Ta-da, finally.
Yeah. So I kind of blew me up, but I have bought my very first business. I was 19 years old. It was a stock market simulator. And it was kind of one of those things that fell into my lap. Not that it was easy, but just that you know, it made me realize that there were these opportunities out there where you could go and buy a business. And you know, Noah and I were just having dinner and talking about that whole entrepreneur journey, which usually starts when you're a kid and you are starting to try to sell things and make money. And I literally never thought that you could buy income instead of starting from scratch. And so that very first deal, I ended up actually getting done, even though I was a broke college kid, saved up $3,000 and had very little money. They wanted $70,000 for that business, but I was still, you know, able to negotiate a deal where they were willing to finance part of it. I took out some credit card debt, borrowed some money from a friend, and pulled the money together to get that deal done. And since then, have bought a lot of businesses. The biggest transition point for me after that was after I bought my fifth deal and I met a mentor who flipped hospitals. And even if that's all he did was like, I meet him and he's like, I'm like, what do you do for a living? And he told me, I flip hospitals. That would have been enough of a paradigm shift for me that he probably would have changed my life at 25 years old. But he was willing to spend time with me and kind of pour into me and shift a lot of my mindset.
when it came to business and income generation and this whole concept of buying a business over starting from scratch. And that was one of the things that I take into things. You know, I do have a little bit of a startup with my training business when I go out and help other people kind of get into buying businesses. And I still bring a lot of those concepts that he taught me into this world.
Who flips hospitals? I've never even heard that. That's nuts. So we have some questions coming in, and I want to make sure. Actually, before we dive in, I have one quick thing. What are you guys doing together then? What's the new business in a nutshell?
So Noah and I are starting to we've already been investing in other people who want to go out and buy businesses. And now we're putting together a bit of a fund where we're going to be lending money to people who want to buy internet-based businesses, because that's a space where just traditional banks, traditional financial institutions and lenders kind of look over. They're not coming into this industry. And it really takes people who have bought these businesses and grown them and done deals in the space to be willing to loan money there. And so, yeah, we spent the day kind of mapping out what that's going to look like. Obviously, I've done it here and there over the past 6 years, and now we're going to kind of turn it into a business and be lending and helping other people who are trying to put together the finances for them to buy a business.
Interesting. Okay, so what I love, and this is kind of funny because I really feel like people that are listening right now are going, wow, these guys seem like they do amazing things, but I don't know what to ask them from. So let's get into the questions so that way we can really go in, because you guys really help people level up, whether it's a business that you own, right, to systematize, make it make more money, make it more profitable, and then sell it, or to give, like, consulting services. So let me bring up Jason. So Jason is, right now he's doing about $5,000 a month in services. He's amazing at SEO and digital marketing in general. His main goal is to do $21,000 per month, but having $15,000 taken from this digital magazine that he's doing, so he's creating all this content on the marketing side, and then have do a advertising model, and then he wants $6,000 per month to come from services. So he assumes, like, looking into the future, because this is a brilliant, smart guy, he wants to have a team of four, including him, full time. And so he's asking, what would your approach be to help me take my part-time business from 5K to 21 by next March? And it's kind of open-ended, but he wanted to see where you guys were going to take it. So I don't know who wants to start first on that.
So maybe I'll start by using Ace's kind of example of acquiring revenue. So the easiest way to go from 5,000 to 20,000 is to buy 15,000. So I think most hustlers, most people, their predisposition is, what can I build myself with my own two hands? And, you know, what Ace has been preaching for 16 years is, no, actually, it might be a lot cheaper to just go buy it. And maybe buying someone else's revenue stream and then, you know, plopping that into what you're doing, that might be a much faster way to achieve the goal.
Yeah, the thing that I would piggyback off of that is, we've seen the additional effect, and I think the value that you can get. This is one perspective. Obviously, James is going to bring in a lot of different people, but the perspective that I think and the value that you can learn from Noah and I is a specific perspective, and in addition to buying the income, you're also buying the kind of a net effect that comes with another business that has customers, it has traffic, it has agencies that is proven that are valuable, it has employees that can do certain tasks. And so you're getting this foundation that in and of itself is valuable. And in a business, what we're doing is a series of tests. And that's the hard part of this. I mean, anybody can do it, but it takes our most valuable asset, which is our time. And so we've got to do these series of tests. And what you're doing when you take over a business is, yeah, you get that instant income, you get the revenue that starts coming in the very next day after closing. But the really powerful thing is that you just have leapfrogged your process. So they've done all of that testing. It's amazing. We get a lot of sellers that come into us and they're completely exhausted. And they've gotten a business from zero to a $250,000 in revenue, and it's just starting to make some money past the cost, and it's past break even. But they're like, man, I cannot wake up and do this again because they've run so many tests. They've been through the failure. They've been through the heartache. You know, they poured all that time in, and then we get to come over and take over the easy part. And then I'll wrap that up by kind of giving one of my stories about my mentor that had a big impact on me. I'd sold a business. I had a lot of money. And, you know, I went to him and I'm like, you know what? Now I'm ready. I'm ready to do a startup. And I gave him a pitch for this amazing business that I was really pumped up about. And I could tell that on his face, he could care less. He had, you know, no interest whatsoever. And I'm like, obviously he doesn't get it. So I got more passionate, and I'm telling him why this is a great idea, and I wrap up my pitch, and he points to my computer, and he's like, so tell me about your computer. And I'm like, really? Like, you're not going to respond to my idea at all? And he's like, where'd you get it? And I'm like, well, it's Dell, so I just called Dell and got it. He's like, well, why didn't you build it from scratch? And you know, I'm like, I don't know how to build a computer. He was like, well, you can go online and learn. I was like, yeah, but I don't have the parts and stuff. He's like, you can buy those online. And his bottom line point was, the reason I bought the computer is because I wanted to use it. You know, I wanted to be able to get online. I wanted to get my work done. Like, my goal wasn't to be able to build a computer. I wanted to be able to use it. And so it's the same thing. I think a lot of entrepreneurs get confused with the fact that we want to get the income, and we're so brainwashed to think the only way for me to go get income is to try to start something new. And we forget this opportunity that everywhere else, you know, if we want a house, we go and we buy it. If we want a car, we go and we buy it. We'll learn how to build a car. And so income can be one of those things where all the different components of the business that you want to build are out there. And so you can go out and you can find it and you can buy it just like you buy your car.
Okay, I love and hate that analogy of the computer thing. Because A, I still build computers. But B, like, that's so annoying. That makes it as though everybody should just buy a business instead. So Jason actually has a follow-up question in regards to that, because I think you just went, ah! He's like, I agree with what they are saying. I'm trying to build a model to rinse and repeat with other digital magazines also. So how much money do I need percentage-wise to leverage something like buying another business? How much would I have to save to buy a business that's cash flowing about $21,000 profit per month?
That's a really great question. So the real thing, and our goal when we're buying a business, is finding a business seller who's really motivated. And you know, we've got a deal right now that Noah and I are looking at financing. I think a lot of times people look at what we do, and we've done a lot of deals that are very little money up front. And so you've got to do work either way. So either you're going to do the work to try to build something from scratch and see if it makes money, or you're going to do the work to find a really great deal from a motivated seller. And they're definitely out there. So, you know, a lot of people will look at the deals we've done where we had a motivated seller because of health or different issues. But we've got a deal right now where we're buying a business from a guy out in Arizona. He's a young guy, 26 years old, has built $1 million business. And the only time you should stop paying attention to a $1 million business is when you started another business that's a $10 million business. And so he's built this $10 million business. The other $1 million business is getting no attention. It's starting to die.
Whoops, I built a $10 million company. $1 million company we have. Sorry, continue.
So, we're looking at buying this business. It's going to be, you know, close to a 50% discount. It's going to be amazing terms. He's financing a big portion of it. It's easy to get financed because the income is so great. And if he doesn't make a move quickly, and he knows that we're good at what we do, we're going to be able to take care of this thing. But if he doesn't make a move quickly, it's going to eventually die because, like we said, he's got a $10 million opportunity. So motivated sellers are everywhere. And I encourage people, if you're interested in the space and you know, and it sounds like, hey, you're very focused on this space, I would find out where the conferences are that other people who own these businesses are going to be. I mean, especially in the magazine space, there are going to be a lot of people who started these things, have built up big followings, built up even subscribers and all that, and then they just lose interest because a magazine is actually a lot of work. I've actually looked at some deals in the space. It's work. You know, if you don't have a big staff and people keeping up with everything, putting together each issue and keeping up with all that is working. So people can lose passion. They get distracted. They want to move to the next thing. So I think you're actually in an ideal space to be able to, you know, do a roll up or something like that. So, you know, if you're interested in talking about those kind of things, you can feel free to reach out to me. I'm ace@acechapman.com.
I love that. Okay. I love bringing people that can sort of flip people's thoughts. Like, oh, well, I have to build it. Like, I just have to. You're like, no. Save yourself a whole year or a couple years of the startup phase and jump right in. So we have
Jamie, just to jump on that real quick. It's also risk, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just save the time. Somebody else has already gone through the risk process. So I failed in at least half a dozen businesses where I've started something and I ended up being at zero at the end. And that was just a function of the risk. You know, I took a risk. I wanted something to work and it didn't. Now the good news is I've succeeded a lot more times than I've failed. And it all works out okay in the end. But ideally, if we could avoid the risk, then the time is just a, you know, secondary benefit.
Man, see, the last time I chatted with Ace, I remember I wanted to, like, go buy a business the next day. I was like, no, you guys are doing it again to me. All right. Mano is asking, when should an entrepreneur who's bootstrapped to start till now consider outside investment in the company?
So I'll take this one, Ace.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to look at what your rate of return is. So it's to me, it's a mathematical formula at first. So what is my return on equity? Meaning, how much is my business worth today? And how much is it going to be worth next year? Plus how much I'm going to make in the next 12 months. So let's say my current business is worth 150 grand. I think by next year, I'm going to make 75,000 out of this business. And my business will be worth 225,000. So I'm going to go from 150,000 to 300,000 over the next 4 months. So that's 100% return on my equity in this company. Well, if I'm going to get 100% return, do I want to bring in an equity investor who's basically going to want some portion of my 100% return? Or do I want to try and find some other solution to bring in capital where I could pay less than that 100%? When you're small and you're trying to scale, sometimes you can't find anyone that's going to take less than whatever the return on equity is going to be. Because, you know, to loan you money at even at 18% or 16% plus, you know, 5% of the equity, it's not appetizing enough for them to get interested in your business because, again, going back to risk, you haven't necessarily figured it out yet. So the only way they're going to do it is if they get equity. But you've got to figure out, are you willing to give up that upside to bring in capital? How valuable is that capital going to be to you? What's it going to generate for you? So if you've got that business that's going to go from 150 grand in value to essentially 300 grand in value, your earnings plus what it's worth at the end, and now you want to bring in someone for 100 grand and they're going to own the third of your company, well, what are you going to do with that 100 grand? Are you going to be able to turn that 100 into 200 at a minimum? Because they're basically going to take a third of, you know, whatever you're creating. So you got to look at the numbers. And then the second piece is, you know, aside from just the financial piece, where is the complementary skill set? So one of the reasons Ace and I are trying to do this business together is because we both bring a little bit of different things to the party. So Ace could do this on his own and has been. I've been doing it on my own. But together, there's some synergies there. Not necessarily that, you know, the money's much easier. It's just when you have more talent and more skill and a bigger network, sometimes you could accomplish things much faster. So, you know, is that where the value is going to come from? I mean, I think you see that on Shark Tank all the time. They say, well, hey, you know, you want me to be involved in this deal. Like, I'm going to give you access to my network. That's worth 10% of your company. So forget about the cash. And then if I'm going to put in cash, I want some more for that too. So
that's really interesting. I have another client that's going through that exact same question. So I'm like, Joel, make sure we note this and then send it to Joey also, because he's dealing with bigger numbers, but still very much similar things. So I really appreciate that. So Carl was asking, how do you recommend interfacing with mentors? Informally, quarterly, what format do you guys suggest?
I think it just depends on the mentor, whatever they want.
I got a lot of value out of my original mentor on a quarterly basis. I really try to do very dense meetings. You know, even now I've got mentors that I only go to when, you know, it's really crucial, it's really important. It's not about chit-chat, and I learned that lesson the very first time I met with Mike, my original mentor. And, you know, I kind of showed up to his office and we sat down. He was like, so what did you bring? And I was like, well, nothing. He was like, you didn't bring financials? I was like, no. He's like, you don't have your personal financial statement? I was like, no. He was like, so you just want to chat? And I was like, I thought so. He's like, if you don't have anything for us to talk about or review and go over specific things, then this is pointless. Like, I don't have time to chit-chat with anybody. And, you know, of course, I brought my financials. And that was a very great lesson and a very short lesson and short meeting. But I brought my financials and, like, very specific things to go over when I met my mentors in the future.
Lesson learned. That happened to me too. Now mine are all very like, okay, I email them beforehand. I have a board now. And then we tell everybody and then we do one deep dive. And yeah, I totally understand because I've been whipped a few times. So like, oh, I thought you were just going to ask me questions. I love that. Okay. So Linda was saying, what should you look for in buying an e-commerce business and how does it differ from buying a traditional type business?
So when it comes to e-commerce, it's great. We went into a little bit of a deep dive on e-commerce deals today. One of the things that you have to consider is the amount of time, headache, and effort put into managing inventory. So there is a very big reason FBA deals, you know, fulfilled by Amazon type businesses where you ship the inventory to Amazon and they're handling fulfillment, or drop shipping deals where, you know, you send the order and the manufacturer is shipping directly. So there's a very specific reason why those are so popular. It's because dealing with inventory is a time suck and a money suck and is in general a bunch of headaches. So it's one of those things where inventory is something you want to pay attention to. You know, how much it's overlooked, I think, in a lot of cases. How much cash are you having to spend? You know, when people are looking at deals, it's easy to just look at that bottom line figure and do a multiple based on that. The next thing is, you know, where's the traffic coming from? For other sites like blogs and affiliate sites, it's okay for the incoming traffic on those to be organic. You know, we love organic traffic for those type of sites and you know, it creates high margin type situations. But for e-commerce business, you really want to be able to control the traffic coming in, which means you need paid traffic. So we have done deals where they're also social traffic, which would be number two. But, you know, I really like paid traffic, number one. So we recently bought a business where all of the traffic came from a really huge following, you know, over 100,000 on Instagram, you know, 100,000 on Twitter, and it was just this huge social media following, and the traffic was great there. The biggest, the scariest thing there is that, you know, they're in control of the traffic, how often your followers are seeing you, et cetera. So, you know, as long as you're paying those folks, if you're paying Instagram, you're paying Facebook, it's not dependent on organic, there's a lot less risk there. So those are a couple of tips. And then the last thing I'll say is just in general, e-commerce multiples right now are about 2.5 times earnings. So whatever the bottom line profit is, you want to stay around 2.5 times that profit annually.
Awesome. Okay, so I have a couple other questions that have come through, and I want to make sure we can get to all of them. So one question was, and this is sort of a general question, maybe you guys can both chime in on this with your two cents, but what are a few things that might be relevant for startup entrepreneurs trying to make their first 10 or 20 grand? Now, I know you guys mostly go a little bit higher above and beyond that, but I'd love for the ones that you have built, what are those main points that hustlers should be focusing on that?
So I'll take a stab at this first. I mean, you know, obviously it depends on what your business is, right? But I think getting really clear on your business model, so what is the model for how we're going to generate revenue, making sure that that model is the best model. Because there's so many ways to skin a cat in business. You know, how are you going to charge the customer? Even the terms of how you're going to charge the customer. Do you get prepaid or do you get paid after? Do you give them 30-day terms? So looking at that business model, I think, is really key to getting started and figuring out how to scale. Because if you have to change your model because it's not working, that's much different than having to change your marketing strategy or having to change your first employee.
Yeah, I just like focusing on what's working, you know, and, you know, and that kind of ties into the business model, but I think the way that you are figuring that out is, not trying to force something on the market. And so many entrepreneurs, because we're just dreamers at heart, we have our vision for the way something is supposed to work. And I think just the more you're in tune with reality and the market and what it's telling you, and scaling and growing based on the facts in a business, that's really powerful. And I can't tell you the number of times we've bought businesses from people, and there've just been really obvious things. It's like the obvious thing in this business is to do this, and the person that owns that business and that's owned it forever just can't see it. They're so blinded by what their vision of what the business is supposed to look like. And so just being in tune, even when you're just at the very beginning, you're talking to potential customers and, you know, taking their feedback, just making sure you're always in tune with the reality of the market and the demands and the best path for growth.
I'm going to add one more thing, Jamie, because I think it's, you know, maybe even more pointed to the question that was asked. You got to focus on sales. So a lot of entrepreneurs that I come in contact with that are early stage, they're focused on, you know, the back end. They're focused on operations, and they're kind of thinking, you know, if we build it, they will come. And time and again, what I've seen in my experience is that if you focus on selling, like my business partner Chris Ream, he says, there's nothing in this world that 20 meetings a week won't solve. And you know, what that just means is, look, when you're out belly to belly with the people that you want to buy whatever you're selling, you're going to learn enough and you'll figure it out along the way. And, you know, it's some of us, especially if we're craftsmen, you know, if we're technically inclined, like you had Doug Kiskin on, Jamie, you know, who does that culture index. So, you know, I'm a craftsman, you know, by his definition. I like building things. But the challenge is you got to sell it. You know, it's only valuable when you sell it. So if you're trying to get started, you got to just hustle and get those sales and talk to people. that want to buy what you have.
So this is the perfect follow-up to both of the – and I we have a couple other questions that just came in. But to me, and I feel like this is what Hustler's the next obvious follow-up question, is what happens if it's taking too long? So like just what you were saying, Ace, and just what you were saying, Noah, what happens if the sales part is like much harder than you expect, or you can't get the appointments, you can't get 20 appointments like you want, no matter how much you keep pounding the pavement, or you're not getting the you're getting some clients or whatever it is, but it's just going so much slower than you want it to. Like, it's hard to go, oh, I want to work on scaling when you feel like you haven't made as much traction as you could in the time that you have.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, you know, I really hate to use the word because it's so overused, but it's the whole pivot thing. You know, if some aspect of the business isn't really working, then, you know, you've got to kind of reassess the path that you're going down and just work smarter instead of harder. There is value to cutting your losses and doing the thing that really does work. I'm certain, which, you know, is obvious based on the path that I've chosen to buy businesses. I'm a very big believer that just, you know, our most valuable asset is time. So I want to be able to cut down the amount of time that it takes for me to reach my goal. And so one part of the question when you're in that situation is, am I just passionate about this? Because the person that is passionate about acting, you know, I love Morgan Freeman's story. I mean, this guy, like, he's in every movie now, but it was 40 years before he started getting roles. And that's why, like, the only way you think of Morgan Freeman is as an old guy is because he didn't start acting until he was old. And so, you know, if that's your real passion, then it doesn't really matter. But if your goal is income, then then, you know, it should just be, okay, what's my quickest path to that? And if you see, you know, okay, it's going to take me forever if I build my business with this model. I got to knock on 100 doors for every one customer. Eventually, hey, you could make $1 million that way, but are you going to be 80 by the time you get to a million? That isn't quite as valuable as pivoting to the thing that's going to make you a million this year.
Okay, I like the way you leverage that based on time, though, instead of just – because a lot of people will go, well, I don't feel like I'm in the dip because I definitely have people that are saying, yes, it's just taking longer than I expect, because we entrepreneurs are an impatient bunch in general. But writing it down and figuring out how long it will take and if you're okay with that, that makes perfect sense. All right, so we have another question from Carl that said, and this is sort of a unique one. Is there such a thing as a co-ownership of a charitable foundation? I'm wondering if this would be a good way to structure a board of advisors. So, like, he's talking about a charitable, yeah, Noah.
So charitable foundations have boards, but not owners. So they're controlled by a board, not controlled by an owner. So you can't have a co-owner.
Okay, so I was trying to ask more follow-up questions going, like, I think I understand what you're saying. Okay, so about how and when to set up a board of directors, but the charities. Okay. So you have to have a board with the charity. How would he go about starting to set that up then?
So it depends what type of charity. So you have certain charities that are tax deductible charities where people make contributions. They get a tax deduction for it. Those are called 501c3 charitable organizations. And, you know, you could. I created my own 501c3. I had a business that worked with affluent divorcing women, and as part of that business, I created like a companion nonprofit where we educated not affluent divorced women, you know, poor divorced women on finances. And so I created a 501c3. You've got to pay about $1,000 to get all the paperwork filled out. You wait a couple of months for the IRS to get back to you, and they'll approve you. And then you have an annual filing requirement, which is a Form 990-T for nonprofits. You got to just file your Form 990s. There's another type of nonprofit, which is a 501c7, which, like my college fraternity, which I was the treasurer of for 20 years after I graduated college and finally was able to give that up. That's a 501c7. Those are fraternal organizations. That might be your local, you know, soccer organization. It could be any of the, you know, organizations that aren't there to make money, but you can't make a donation to them and take a tax deduction.
Well, he had a quick follow-up question that said, well, then how are they paid?
So you can be paid.
He can send you a quick little email, because so that way, because normally if we don't have enough time to bring him up, it'd be probably easier for him to talk to you about it instead of me randomly asking questions. Go ahead.
Yeah, noah@freedomadv.com.
You guys are awesome. So we had another question, too, that came in. I know we have to start wrapping up in just a few minutes. So one of the things that was asked was how, Noah, you specifically do the equity positions. And I don't know if you do or not, Ace, but so if you're a consultant or a coach, how do you go about taking for the consulting relationship? What does that look like, and what are sort of the pros and cons of that? Because I've done it, too, and I don't know. I sort of stay away from it because I don't like having – I don't like somebody else controlling something.
So I'm really comfortable being a minority investor. That's just a role that I've gotten very comfortable in. And the primary reason is because I know that then I'm betting on the team, and the team's not really going to rely on me to be the engine that pushes things forward. So I could do – you know, Rob Slee is an author that wrote a book called Time Really Is Money, and he talks about working for $5,000 an hour as a minimum. So that's kind of what I work towards. It doesn't always happen. Not every hour can be worth $5,000. But the goal is, how can I just spend a couple hours a month with this company and have that generate that $5,000 an hour return for me? And I'm not going to do that if I'm controlling it, because there's not enough in it for the other people then. So I like being a minority investor. I typically like to invest in these growing, profitable companies that are cash flow negative, because I think that gives me at least the momentum at my back. And then the consulting work that I do, I generally pay for that in equity also, depending on the role that I take on. So if it's just a straight, you know, board role, and I'm going to come in once a quarter and participate in a board meeting, and then on a monthly basis review the financials, I might not get any compensation for that. That's just part of my equity investment. But if I'm going to lead strategic planning meetings, if I'm expected to have a weekly coaching call with the CEO, then I'm going to probably get compensated with equity, not in cash.
How do you find the right fits for you in regards to that? Like, or do you just sort of have a number that you do, and if they seem like a kind of good fit, you say yes? I'm personally wondering about that, because I usually don't do that. Even though I could have a bazillion, like, little minority things, it just seems like more of a headache than me getting paid my normal $1,000 an hour coaching for real business.
Right. So I used to do the coaching and consulting, and what I found was I could never charge as much as the value I created, because, you know, like, I'm selling a company in this quarter. It'll probably sell for about $140 million, and I've been a consultant to that company for 16 years. They started out, you know, doing $16 million in sales. When I started with them, this year we'll do $80 million in sales. And, you know, I've been there the whole way. Now, I wasn't the engine leading the freight train, but, you know, maybe I was pushing it from behind a little bit, doing their strategic planning for a number of years, sitting on the board for a number of years. I couldn't charge them the value I was creating. It's just the economics wouldn't work. So the only way I can get paid fairly for me, from my perception, is to charge equity, because nobody wants to pay $5,000 an hour. You know, maybe they'll pay $1,000 an hour, but $5,000 gets really tough.
Like startups of, like, we don't have any money at all, so unless they go from zero to quite a few million quite quickly, it's still not really worth, you know, if they do a couple hundred thousand, you'd just be in it for a long time. So I was wondering how you sort of get in, get out kind of a thing, but that example makes a lot more sense to me anyway. Yeah. All right, sweet. I know we have to start wrapping up, because I have specific questions that we always ask every single time. But what I want to do before we ask you the last questions, Ace and Noah, everybody that's listening, what are your one or two takeaways from tonight? So go ahead and write those down right now so we can call them out at the end while I ask Noah and Ace, the last ones. Thanks for not stepping on each other's toes, too. You guys were great at this. Not like beating each other up going, I'll take this question. No, I will. All right, so I want you both to answer this separately. What is one thing you would tell every business owner in Hustlers right now? So their goal, they're with me for 3 months. It's live group coaching. Like, we're trying to push them forward, sales, going all in as much as they can for 3 months, because I personally don't think you can hustle forever at the level that we need. I'm not Gary Vee. So what is that one thing you would tell them in this spot?
Ace, you going first?
I'll take that first. I deal with a lot of business owners. And, you know, like we said earlier in the call, we tend to be dreamers. We tend to be very optimistic people. And, you know, we love our idea and we want to grow it and we get the vision for what our business can be. The thing that we don't think about enough is the exit strategy and what our business needs to look like to have maximum value when we sell it, because there are only a few things that are going to happen. You know, we're not going to own the business forever. We're going to pass it on to somebody, and somebody's going to buy it from us, or it's going to close down. And so we want to position it so that we maximize that value. And, you know, anytime I own a business, my goal is that I build it in such a way that when I go to sell it, I have people clamoring, you know, to buy it compared to all the other business that are on the market in that space.
Oh, that's so interesting. I remember my first mentor would teach me about exit strategy, and I was like, wow, I don't understand this at all. And you just summed it all up, everything he taught me. So I really appreciate that. Noah, what do you have?
I was going to say what he said, but he already said it. So. well, you thought it was so good. How am I going to top that, you know? The thing that came to my mind, because you were talking about, you know, they're going to hustle with me for the next 3 months, is that this never stops. You know, it's always planning, it's always blocking and tackling, it's always thinking about the future, it's always learning and growing. It never ends. And you gotta love the pain, you know, right? Mm-hmm. Enjoy the suck, as they say in the novels. Because it sucks to get things off the ground, and you know, it's a struggle. But the struggle really never stops, and so you got to enjoy the figuring out these puzzles, figuring out how to interact with people, figuring out how to get the sales, figuring out how you're going to learn, you know, this new strategy, this new tactic, this new software, whatever it is. We've got to always be learning and growing, and it'll never end, and you got to love it.
Okay, so as you were talking about puzzles, I just imagined one of the hustlers like sitting at a table and having, you know, somebody take 7 different 1,000-piece puzzles and just dump them all in one big huge pile, because that's what it feels like, right? You're like going through and going, where does this piece go? Which one does this go along? But you're right. You have to actually enjoy that process. If you don't, just buy a business like this that already works.
go buy a Subway, right? And, you know, and it's done for you. Somebody else already wrote the manual. So, I mean, that's what I would say is there's entrepreneurs that are looking for a cash flow and don't really want to solve puzzles. Buy a franchise. They figured it out.
See, I really hope it solidifies a lot of people that are listening to this also just going, you know what? I do like solving puzzles. I didn't expect this many puzzles, but I do like solving them instead of just running the manual. Because, like, I know a lot of the people in Hustlers aren't manual runners. They're not going to be like, oh, I just do what I'm told and it'll work. So it's funny. Some of the key takeaways that people were saying really revolved around, so Linda said, don't try and build your own computer, but really revolved around sort of shifting their mindset on what you can do. Jason was saying, pivot, bridge the time gap by acquiring the business you want or almost the business you want and then improve it and mold it. So you guys really definitely shifted some things. They're going to be like, is this a distraction or an opportunity, Jamie? But like you said, if it aligns with your goals and you can just get better, faster, easier, because it's less risky. Why the heck is it not worth your time to sort of dive deeper into that too? So I really, really, really appreciate you guys taking the time to come out tonight and do this. I want to have you guys back on the show again. You guys are amazing. I want to talk to you personally and be like, okay, every time I talk to you, you guys make me want to buy businesses. I think all the hustlers sort of feel the same way too. So everybody make sure to say thank you. Quite a few people were asking for like your emails to follow up. So we'll post if anyone has any questions, we'll give them the emails. But if anybody needs to check you guys out, where do we find either your new venture or you? Or I know we have here the links to more on the interviews that we did beforehand, but where's the best way for us to connect with you guys?
For me, it's LinkedIn, because that's always evergreen. I'm always changing it, so it's always accurate. Noah at Freedom ADV has been my email for a number of years. That's always pretty good. And then on the internet, I don't really have like a website where I capture leads of any sort. I do all my stuff, via LinkedIn or email.
Didn't you guys love hearing that? He's like, oh yeah, I don't do that whole list building thing that everybody's working their butts off trying to do. Sorry. where can they connect with you?
What's weird is I've been doing a ton of texting lately over email. So if you want to text me, you can text me at 585-670-6609. Because I'm definitely not a zero email inbox kind of person. I'm like literally over 100,000. So, for personal relationships, like text is just really working and get, quick questions and that kind of thing. So that number again, 585-670-6609. If you do want to email me, it's ace@acechapman.com.
I love it. You gave out your phone number. I know you have a Rochester, New York number, huh? I used to live there.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I went to school upstate.
Where did you go to school?
We got all kind of connections. Colgate University.
Oh, no way. That's funny. I went to RIT. Anyway,
crazy.
We'll chat later now that I have your phone number, Ace.
I didn't have
it beforehand. So he gave everybody listening, he gave you his number before I even got it. So he's amazing. Thank you guys so much for coming on. Everybody's saying thank you, thank you. Many thanks. Really appreciate your time tonight. If you guys need anything, of course, please let me know. Even if there's businesses to buy and I can email my list and be like, hey, who wants to sell their business to Ace and Noah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. We're going to hit you up, Jim. We're taking you up on it.
All my startup people are going to be like, I'm so sick of this. Yes, please. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. I hope you have a fantastic night. Like I said, everybody check them out, connect with them. They're amazing. And if you two need anything, definitely let me know, okay?
You got it, Jamie.
Thanks, guys. Night.
Good night.